This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Choosing to Live, Enduring the Loss of a Loved One. And the author is Jerry Campbell, and Jerry joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, and this interview is brought to you by Archway Publishing. Hello, Jerry.
Good morning, Steve.
Great to have you with us. So sorry for your loss. Your wife passed away in 2010, very unexpectedly.
Yes, thank you very much.
And, of course, as you put it, we plan for life, not for death. We never know. And so you've produced this book kind of a, would you call it a guidebook?
Well, in a way, yes. I would call it a guidebook. When my wife died, what I needed was a book that would help me. I knew about the stages of grief, but what I needed was a guide that would help me work through those stages in a disciplined way. So that I could continue to work. And I found no such guide out there.
So take us back to that time when everything seemed to be under control. She had this rare disease, but she broke her ankle. Tell us what happened.
Well, she broke her ankle, had to have it repaired. It was pinned. And she fell. One morning in the kitchen, we were on our way to Santa Fe. It was really the wee hours. She fell, hurt her ankle, and suggested that I go on without her, and she would get it looked at and call me. Well, when she did call, she said it was broken in two places, and so I flew back, and she had surgery. Everything went fine until. They took the cast off and said, well, it's time for you to go to therapy. So she began her therapy, and there was a small scab left from the surgery, and she got an infection. And it was a bacterial infection, and the particular antibiotic for that bacteria sometimes had a rare side effect of causing chest congestion. And she was really quite subject to that because of that rare disease she had. And so she ended up with double pneumonia and in 19 days died.
Wow, 19 days. That's how quickly things can change. Like we all know, that unexpected, really kind of an event that just rips you apart, and it happens all the time to people.
It does. Yeah, it is not an unusual experience.
Right.
Though when it happened to me, I felt like I was the only one who had ever suffered like that.
Sure.
That's one of the phenomenons that is described by the book on grief and grieving.
So we've heard of the five stages of grief. Just list those for us.
Well, you know, it begins, you can't believe it happened. So the first stage is just disbelief. And it is, you know, you go home, the place looks the same. And it's just, I was, and most everyone is, gripped by this difficulty in believing that someone is close to you has died, and that stage is the first to happen, and then the second, as it begins to become real, anger is a stage there where you get mad at everyone, including yourself, and it's hard to articulate. Being mad at yourself, it's sometimes even hard to know why you're mad. But anger is stage number two. Stage three is a stage that Kubler-Ross and Kessler call the bargaining stage. That's where, you know, you lay down in bed at night, the person you've lost is missing, and you say, well, God, when I wake up in the morning, just let this all have been a bad dream. You know, and so you try to make a deal. If that'll happen, then I'll be good the rest of my life, or, you know, some bargain that you would try to drive. And it gives you momentary a kind of relief from the pain of it, even though you know it's not true in your head. It's just a way of giving yourself a moment of relief. This fourth stage, once you've been through these first three, and they don't happen just so sequentially, you can go in and out of any stage at any time. But the fourth one then is depression, because you're deep enough into it by the time the fourth stage begins to show up that the reality of it all is clear to you. And it is then really kind of conducive to becoming depressed. And that was the tough stage. That's the, you know, you either get out of that or you don't. And you don't, one doesn't want that depression to become kind of clinical depression. And then the fifth stage, if one is able to deal constructively with depression, it's called acceptance. And that's a stage where you begin to explore what life is going to be like without your former loved one with you. And, you know, you gradually come to accept it, and then you move on with life. So those are the kind of classic five
right.
stages.
Well, you have added stage number six, and you call it growth. Explain where you're coming from on that.
Well, my experience was after I moved through those stages, and particularly when I decided to draft the manuscript, it forced me to work back through those stages kind of in a cognitive, deliberate way. And I believe that as a result of that, I somehow became a bit healthier in my own understanding of life and death, and a way to approach life and the possibility of death without being undone. I think it just made me into a kind of healthier, wiser person for having had that terrible experience.
Life goes on when something this tragic happens to us. For you, you were extremely busy professionally. Tell us a little bit about what you were doing when all this happened and how you were able to keep moving forward.
Well, I was at the time president of a school of theology out in Claremont, California. And it is a Protestant United Methodist-related school. And as I was doing that, some of us became interested, particularly me and some of the trustees, became interested in why religion sometimes caused conflict rather than brought about harmony. Because you would think that religion would be involved in making the world a kinder, gentler place, but it's often associated with conflict, even war. And so I decided to found a new university that would be, from its outset, welcoming to any and all religions, and have as its goal teaching people how to get along in spite of their different beliefs, different value systems, and so forth. And, you know, creating a university is a significant undertaking. It requires a great deal of thought, a great deal of fundraising. It's just a challenging task. And it was right at the critical moment in the development of that new university that Vita had her accident and ended up dying. So that was why it was a moment I could not give up my professional life, or if I did, it would have significant consequences for an undertaking that I had gotten started and had some significant number of people helping with, and I did not want to. Didn't feel like I could just turn that loose and let it collapse.
What's the importance of developing what you call a grief calendar?
Well, I realized when I was looking for a guide to help me get through it that I was very accustomed in that work to being driven by a calendar. I had numerous speaking engagements. I had numerous meals with individuals. I had numerous appointments to talk to people about all manner of things that were going on. And so I started every day. I actually ended every day by looking at the calendar to see what was going to be happening the next day, and sometimes even longer than a day. And so I thought, if I could put my grieving onto a calendar, I would then be certain not to overlook it. I would be certain that I didn't miss any of the stages. I didn't want to end up, months down the road without having dealt with anger or depression or something like that. I didn't want them coming back on me, as it were. So I built them into what I call in my grief calendar, and that allowed me the assurance that I was not going to ignore my grieving or miss something, because what I would do every day is look at my calendar to see what I had scheduled, and I actually went by those stages, and I built them in. Vita died on the 19th of April, and I built them into my calendar with the end date of January 2nd of the next year. Looking forward to that as the end date of my kind of the official approach to grieving. So that's what the grief calendar did. It helped me essentially segregate my personal grief life from my professional life, where I was more or less on stage, where grief would have been, if grief had intervened in my professional life too much, it would really have detracted from my ability to get that work done. So that's essentially the idea for the calendar.
Because you have to work at this. That's why you call it grief work.
That's correct. Oh, you really do have to work. Speaking for myself, I had to work at it. I had to say to myself, okay, how am I doing with disbelief? With my wife had built a house in North Carolina for retirement. And, sometime after I had gotten through the disbelief stage, I went to visit that house. And I suddenly had disbelief all over again because it was a very different setting, and I had never been there without her. Then I could say, well, I better go back. I better go back and put disbelief, a couple of sessions of thinking about disbelief back on my calendar so I can, be sure I do have that dealt with. So, the grief, grieving is hard work.
As we kind of wind up our discussion on your book, Choosing to Live, you do have a warning for folks, and I'm sure it seems pretty obvious, but Don't turn to alcohol or drugs as, some kind of a fix for all this pain.
That's right. And in fact, it's don't turn to alcohol, drugs, or television, or any other kind of distraction. It just so happens that alcohol and drugs can be a very debilitating distraction, but any distraction that keeps you from doing the grief work is not really helpful. It may seem helpful at the time because, you know, you can forget about the grief when you drink enough or take drugs or just sit stupefied watching television or something. But what happens then is if you don't deal with those stages or your emotional equivalents of those stages as you're experiencing them, they will come back. And they will come back in ways you can't control, and you can't really reach that what I call that sixth stage of growth without having dealt with those other matters, without having come to grips with them as an adult human being. And so, yes, alcohol and drugs are what they do is blunt your ability to deal with those emotions.
Choosing to Live, that's the title of Jerry's book. We've been talking to Jerry Campbell, and he's with Archway Publishing. Jerry, besides going to Archway Publishing, what are other ways we can get your book?
Well, you can get it from Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, and you have your choice of hardbound, paperback, or I think three different ebook formats.
Thank you so much, Jerry, for joining us on Indie Book Publishing.
Steve, thank you so much. I appreciate it very much.
And this interview has been brought to you by Archway Publishing.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying to 14 ways to get a baby to eat and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled Shield of God, and our author, Nikki De La Cruz, joins me from Wasilla, Alaska. Thank you, Nikki, for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm recording this in December, so I'm assuming it's cold. Do you have snow, ice, and polar bears?
No, actually, we're having a weird season. It snows and then it melts, and it's actually kind of warm. People are actually walking around with no jackets on.
Surprising. Well, they do that in the area. I'm located in Texas, and sometimes in the middle of a very, very cold and frosty morn, sometimes in the 30s here, which is not cold for you guys, but we have Texans, they'll wear a heavy jacket and shorts, so I don't quite understand that either. Your book is a relatively short read, 35 pages. Is this the first book you've written, Nikki?
Yes, sir, it is. It is, and I wanted to keep it short and simple. It's targeted mainly for children. But I believe, especially for parents who read to their kids, will get a lot out of it as well.
What was the inspiration behind it? Obviously, I would say obviously, by looking at it, the Shield of God, it has a religious connotation. But what inspired you to share your particular take on this?
Well, I helped out with a children's ministry for a little while, and I have to boldly brag, I guess, that I'm one of those crazy people that I talk to God and God talks back.
Good.
And it was one morning on the way to church, and I heard God speak to me. He said, Nicole, and I said, yes, sir. He said, I want you to get the kids excited about me like they are these make-believe heroes. And at that point in time, Thor had just came out, and me and all the kids were all excited about that movie. And so I'm thinking like this when I'm hearing these words from God. And I said, okay. And he says, I want you to write a book. And I said, okay, Lord, well, I have no idea what to do, so you lead the way.
Right. So this is... it's not really a Thor takeoff, but it's a book that answers to the general culture that's distracting from what you would see as spiritual things.
Yes, there's a, you know, spiritual warfare matter, biblical, and it's usually, typically, I've only seen adults go over this subject, but it's there, and I even have my past experiences, even as a child, dealing with, negative spiritual things. So I believe that God's just using me, because I'm aware of this, to get this knowledge out there and really, you know, make sure the kids are armed.
Right.
And don't believe any kind of lies from the devil.
Sure. And in preparing to write this, did you sit down one day and just begin to share your thoughts, feelings, and heart, or was this a long time process?
Well, it was back in 2011, about September, and God spoke to me. And it was 2 days later. I love my sleep. I will sleep until last minute, and I have children, and I usually will get up. At that point in time, I have my seasons where I get up and I will read my Bible and I'll pray. And during the season, I was doing that, and I was getting up a little bit early. But 2 days after God spoke to me on this, I woke up even 2 hours earlier than that, just ready, and with just different ideas for this book. Naturally, no alarm or anything. And I got the gist of it down within a couple of weeks. I was getting up every morning and coming up with all these ideas and just throwing it down. And then after I thought it was complete, I felt God kind of just had to do a renewing of my own mind and spirit. And then for about a year and a half, I had to go back and erase some things and add some things and change some words. And it was a pretty long process. And then at the end, I did all the illustrations. So that's kind of how that came to be.
So the illustrations are all yours as well?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And you've done them in a style that is appealing to younger children. Mm-hmm. How long did that take to complete?
Oh, gosh, about a year. I would definitely say about a year's time I worked on it. At the spare time I had, anyways, I am a mother, I have kids, so.
Right. And
it took me a while.
You use sketches, and it looks like you used perhaps some of the elements that a child would use, crayons, Crayolas, something of that nature?
All colored pencils.
Colored pencils?
All colored pencils. Mm-hmm. I use my daughter's color pencils.
You borrowed from your daughter, so your daughter has a part in this indirectly.
Yeah, part of the tools.
All right. If you were to introduce this book to someone, how would you describe it to them? What would you say is a way that maybe a grandparent, a parent, or someone else who's maybe thinking of buying a birthday gift or something for a child, how would you introduce this to them?
Basically, it's anybody who believes in God, which a lot of us, do keep our faith and our strength in God, and that's really important. Let them know that it's the, basics, our foundation in our spiritual warfare of our everyday life, and let them know it's just good knowledge for children. Even they don't realize it because they retain everything, but throughout the whole book, there's scripture in it, and as a believer, This is our armor. This is our shield and our sword. And the more we get into this word and remember it, that sharpens our sword. It strengthens our shield, and it just gives anybody really. And technically, we're all children in God's eyes. it strengthens us and gives us more courage and boldness to go out in life and succeed. And so that's what I feel it is.
You talk about what many people refer to as the source of evil, the devil, and you have some, I will say, graphic photos or graphic sketches. Has this been a problem with children who have read your book?
No, actually, I read a few of my rough drafts to some of the kids that I had the privilege of teaching at church, and the boys especially. Between there was boys from age 9 to 12 in there, and they loved it. They were hyped up on it. They were pulling out their invisible shields and swords and slaying demons.
Wow.
Very entertaining to watch. I thought about that, though, specifically, as far as having these sketches like this, but in another sense, I was like, you know, there's movies out there that have even more graphic, scary-looking creatures.
That's true.
So
that's true.
Why not in this? You know, I think it makes it that much more appealing.
Why don't you share, maybe by reading a little bit of your book? I think the introduction is interesting. Sort of sets the stage, if I can use that term. Why don't you read a little bit of that and let my listeners get a feel for how you have written this?
Okay, based on a true story, there are two families on this earth. One is full of love, hope, and joy, God's family. The other is full of fear, sadness, and hate, Satan's side. It's up to you to choose which family to join. Of course, you want to be on the winning family side, the Lord of Heaven's armies. Because good always conquers evil. So you must believe and listen to the Spirit of God for his protection to be a follower of Jesus, the Son of the Most High God.
That outlines it perfectly. Were there any challenges in getting this done other than the sketches and trying to make sure they were rated G?
You know, that wasn't an issue at all. No challenges there.
Do you feel your book is different from others out there? I don't know if I've seen any that are quite like this, but perhaps your viewpoint may be different than mine.
I'm not 100% positive, but I haven't came across a book that deals with spiritual warfare for children specifically. So I'm kind of boldly throwing it out there and saying, hey, this is real stuff, and good to know and strengthen our children.
Have you always wanted to be an author, or is this a new venture for you and one that you're enjoying?
I'm definitely enjoying it. The thought of being an author, no, never really occurred to me. I'm a hairdresser. I'm a barber now, actually, and I've always been into art, and so now hair is my art. my plan for life isn't always God's plan for life, so I'm kind of like, you know, Jesus take the wheel type.
Sure. I've heard of that song. That's been around.
Yes.
Yes. Have you received any personal advice in addition to the spiritual direction you've taken? Have you received any personal advice that has been a foundation for you that you are leaning on?
I did. I had a pastor speak over me a certain chapter of the Bible, and I've held it really close ever since. Joshua 1, which there's quite a bit in there, and one most popular is Joshua 1:9, be bold and very courageous, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. It also talks about, it's a point in time where Moses had passed on, and then Joshua took over, and he's the one that led the people to the promised land. That is what is, like, kind of really encouraging me. Not kind of, but really encouraging me. And I've had to deal with a lot of pain and suffering, and I have a huge heart for people. The Joshua 1 being spoken over me, nothing specific in that chapter, just Joshua 1 is all he said. It's really given me a lot of, empowered me just to, like, reach out to people and help people.
That's a good passage. I have been familiar with that myself, personally. The title of your book, Shield of God, has a wonderful graphic on the cover. The book is a good rock or foundation to build the hearts and minds of our children. It will encourage and give them a sense of boldness to have set and accomplish their heart's desires. Our author, Nikki De La Cruz. Nikki, where can my listeners get a copy of your book?
They can either go to Balboa Press, website and order one online. It's also available on Amazon, Google, or Barnes & Noble, online as far as I know right now. So I've been told and that they won't really have them on the shelves unless they're sought after. So
correct.
But they're online. They're available online.
Sure. They can request it from their local bookseller and right. Under the title Shield of God or under your name, N-I-K-K-I. Last name, D-E-L-A-C-R-U-Z, and they can locate it that way. Nikki, thank you for joining me from Wasilla, Alaska. You're not planning to have... I'll ask a silly question. The understanding of people in the lower 48 is that most Alaskans eat fish all the time. Is that really the truth?
I eat fish as much as I can.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's good. There's all kinds of ways to cook it and can it, and I prefer canned canned copper reds over canned tuna any day.
Amazing. Well, thank you again for sharing not only that recipe secret, but also this is the background story of Shield of God. Do you plan another book in the future?
I'm sensing that there will be another one. I'm not sure if it'll be another children's book, or it might be. I'm kind of sensing this might be the next level up from VeggieTales, kind of a more, you know, for older kids.
Older kids.
So I'm not sure. I'm kind of sensing that. I haven't really had any kind of direction for it. Like I said, I'm along for the ride. Wherever God wants to take me, I will go.
Best of luck on that, and hope to visit with you in the future should the next installment of your series comes out. This one, Shield of God, our author, Nikki Dela Cruz. Nikki, thanks for joining me today.
All right, thank you.
For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of the book is Journey to My Soul. Following divine navigation, our author, Terry Lynn, joins me from the United States near Philadelphia. Thank you for joining me today, Terry.
Thank you for having me, Jay.
This is an autobiographical sketch of your life. You are considered by your friends and associates to be a successful lady in sales, marketing, and in management. Share a little of your background and some of the story that led you to the place you are today.
Well, my background in sales started 28 years ago. I started out in the automotive business, and through that, I was in sales for 8 years. I've been in management for the rest. Currently, I am a sales recruiter and trainer for a company called MMCO, and they own Porsche, Audi, Conshohocken, Audi, Wynwood, and Audi, Volkswagen in Reading.
Wonderful. I guess I need to come to you if I need a vehicle or a set of wheels under my.
That's a great idea, Jay.
Boy, yeah, you're hitting all the nameplates that I love to be associated with. You have not always had an easy task of getting it together, though. Your earlier career, you started off divorced mom with some children and really no career in sight and made some bad choices. And yet you have titled your book, Journey to My Soul, Following Divine Navigation. Share what divine navigation meant in your life and how it came about.
Well, when I was in a horrible spot, financially and emotionally, hopeless situation, my children had moved away with their dad about 2 hours away. And my only goal in life was to be a mom and have kids, so I was devastated. And I turned my life over to God to get me through. If I didn't have children, I probably would have committed suicide at that point. But I couldn't do that to my kids. I loved them too much. So in order to get through, I knew my children needed a happy mother. I came from a happy home life, and I know what love is. Mm. So I surrendered to God, and God got me through. And it wasn't until just a few years ago when I wrote this book that I was able to see with bird's eye view exactly what happened and how God intervened in my life. And I know I can pinpoint it to the point when I made a decision to be a sales manager and put my hope in the future instead of sitting around and waiting for the present to change is when divine navigation took over. And we all have this system within us. But you need to set a goal. You need to set a destination in that navigation system before you can get directions.
How would you describe your book as, in addition to being autobiographical, you have some motivational tips in here and some other aspects of your life that will do positive things for people who read it. What is the one item or one thing besides the divine navigation concept that you are espousing here? What is it that you hope people will take away from reading your book?
The main thing I want people to take away from this book is that to put happiness first. Don't wait for some event or something to happen in your life to be happy. Be happy now, and your whole life is enhanced. And also the importance of feeling good. We are magnets, and when we feel good, we attract more good into our life. When we're on that downward spiral, we just attract more of that. And it seems so simple and easy, but it's a difficult task to achieve.
You had some difficult times and made some choices that, at least on the surface, were a little bit different. It must have been a little painful to share that with family and friends and also with a wide audience. How did you decide that this was important, and why did you want to share it?
Well, because I feel it is so important. And yes, I made choices back in the time when my children moved. I prayed to God for death, and I truly believed I was going to get death, and I was in this waiting for death period. And I used drugs and alcohol just to numb the pain until my life was going to pass, until I got the message that I needed to live. And at that point, I had to focus on something to be happy about. Everything in my life was miserable. But I see the importance now, looking back, at how that saved me and created a life to be happy about.
You made a sidestep into sales and marketing, which I think is unique. Going back 15, 20 years even, it was a little unusual to find a sales manager, especially in the industry you're in right now, that was not a guy. And how did you make that transition and make that that strong personal decision to be in leadership?
Well, when I was in sales early on, and it was the first goal I set, was to be a sales manager, only because I saw that the sales managers were living a good life, and I wanted a good life. I wanted to provide for my children for the times that I did get to spend with them. I wanted a decent life to share with them. So sales management was the way I went, and how it came about was beyond me. I didn't know how I was going to get into sales management. As you said, there were very few women in sales at that time, let alone sales management. But it just so happened that the way I was guided, I was invited into management by a company I had left, because a company I was doing very well with in sales, but something happened, and I was guided to leave that company. And I was invited back as a manager because they knew that's the only way they could get me back. So that was part of the divine guidance.
Incredible. Explain your moniker. Your friends refer to you as Fortune Cookie. How did that happen?
Well, that's true. At one point, I was working in a store where they gave everybody little nicknames, and they used to call me Woohoo because every time we made a sale, that's what I would say. And then one day, something happened. I forget what it was, but it was something that looked pretty bad on the surface. The car got damaged, or I'm not sure exactly what it was. And one of the salesmen just looked at me and said, "Okay, Fortune Cookie, put a positive spin on this one." And when that nickname came to me. It just ignited the fire in me to write, and that's exactly what I did.
How long ago did you start writing this book, Terry?
The end of 2010, beginning of 2011.
What was your motivation in telling your story? Was it personal, or was it beyond that?
Well, it started out as it was actually a writing contest I got in. It was a writing contest for self-help book. And I was out of work at the time. I figured, let me give it a shot. I've always wanted to write a book. And that's how it came about.
Is there any particular scene that is going to grab the reader and maybe startle them or perhaps inspire them in your book?
Well, I hope so. The whole title of my book changed when I had this experience. And I was going through a transition. It was a happy transition. It was a release of this pain that I had been holding in for a long time. But it was a painful transition at the same time. But this one day, I had the experience that my soul was revealed to me. I actually saw my own soul. And it was the most beautiful experience of my life to date. Changed the whole tone of the book, changed the title of my book, and I hope people can take away from that the inspiration that I have. I no longer look at myself and see the imperfections or look out at the world and see the imperfections. I see the beauty in everything today.
Beautiful. Family and friends who have read your book, what is the response you're getting?
They love it. I've been told by people I know and don't know that I have inspired them, that, you know, now they look for the things to be happy. And, I said this when I wrote the book, if I can help one person in life, I'd be thrilled. And I've helped so many people so far that it just amazes me. It's a wonderful, wonderful feeling.
In addition to being a sales manager and successful in your career, if someone finds out you're an author and have penned a book titled Journey to My Soul, how would you introduce that aspect of your life to them?
How do I introduce that? Well, people that I work with and know me, they know that's my natural instinct, is just to be positive. For other people, some people are a little shocked because I'm not that religious type of person, but I am very spiritual. So some people are very shocked to hear the title of my book, but most people are very pleased and accepting of it.
Are there other books out there that are similar to this, or do you feel like yours has a unique spin on Journey to My Soul?
Well, I feel mine's very unique because it is my own personal story. There are very many inspirational books that I've read that have inspired me, but yes, this one is unique mainly because of my journey through the car business, and also because of my journey deep within myself.
Were there challenges that you had to overcome to get this into print?
Yeah, there were many, many, many challenges. I can't tell you how many times, every time I read it, I would change something and write it, and the biggest challenge of all was to hit that send button and release it and say it's done. That was the most difficult thing. I think my blood pressure went up and all kinds of physical, entanglements there.
Well, as a creative, I can relate to that. I have difficulty releasing a finished product. Sometimes I'll rework and over-analyze things for months and even longer sometimes. So it's a great accomplishment that you not only have a successful career in management, but also have completed this book, the title of which is Journey to My Soul, Following Divine Navigation. Terry Lynn has been my guest. Terry, where can my listeners get a copy of your book?
They can get a copy of my book on my website at www.thinkhappybehappy.com or at Balboa Press and Amazon.com.
Is there a plan to maybe do a sequel to Journey to My Soul?
Yes, I'm working on another book currently, yes.
This one's motivational, Following Divine Navigation. The title again is Journey to My Soul, Following Divine Navigation. My guest has been Terry Lynn. Terry, I look forward to visiting with you in the future, finding out more of what you're up to and the next book that you produce. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.